On today's program, we'll uncover what's behind the population control movement and learn why having more babies fulfills God's design for the world. Dr. E. Calvin Beisner will be with us.
Having plenty of children is itself an expression of faith that God has a future for this world and for my family and for the church of which I am a part.
Then, major retailers have decided to get out of the abortion pill business. Parrish Alford of American Family News will explain.
They kind of came back with, well, we don't, but then the website was showing this. There was some confusion there. At the end of the day, both of these retailers have stopped selling it. It's a very dangerous drug.
It's the weekend of January 11th and 12th. I'm Jeff Shambly, and this is The Stand Radio. Well, those of us alive in the 1960s and 70s might remember the ominous warnings of an overpopulated Earth that would bring starvation and disaster. Well, it didn't happen. In fact, just the opposite has happened. Now nations are trying to cope with a future global underpopulation. Well, how did we get to this point, and what does the Christian worldview have to offer? Joining me to discuss this is Dr. E. Calvin Beisner. He's founder, president, and national spokesman of the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation, a network of Christian theologians, natural scientists, economists, and other scholars educating for biblical earth stewardship, economic development for the poor, and the proclamation and defense of the gospel. Hello, Dr. Beisner. It's good to have you with us again.
It's great to be back with you. Thank you very much.
I went back and looked at some news reports from the 60s and 70s, and it was amazing how much fear was being generated about global population predictions. How did this fear of overpopulation come about?
Well, Jeff, it's really not a new thing. You can go all the way back to Tertullian, one of the early church fathers, who wrote in one of his essays against the Gnostics, who wrote that the world was already overpopulated. The islands were all populated. There were people everywhere. There wasn't room for everybody. And that was at a time when total global population was probably somewhere in the neighborhood of about 200 to 300 million people, not the roughly 8 billion we have now. But you can actually go back even farther than that. Abraham and Lot, remember, decided that the land that they were on was not sufficient to support both their families and their flocks, and so they agreed to separate. Lot looked at the very verdant and fertile land in one direction, and he chose that. Abraham had told him, "You pick whichever you please, and I'll take the other, and that'll be fine." Interestingly, Lot made his choice based on his assumptions about the ability of the land to support his people and their flocks. Abraham made his choice on the basis of faith in God's ability to provide for him and his people and their flocks. And as we know, long term, God very much blessed that choice by Abraham, and Lot suffered great problems in Sodom. So I think we can see that early on, people thought that the land, earth, supports man, and that it's easy for us to exceed its carrying capacity, a very common term in the population control movement. Now, in more recent times, fears of overpopulation are more typically associated with the, interestingly enough, Presbyterian minister, but also economist, Thomas Robert Malthus, who in 1798 published his Essay on Population, in which he wrote that population grows geometrically or exponentially, that would be 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, etc., while food supply from crops rises only arithmetically, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, etc. Well, obviously, if that's the case, population is going to outstrip food supply. And if we love people and do not want them to starve to death, And if we don't want war or pestilence, disease to stem the population growth, then out of compassion, we ought instead to encourage people to control their fertility, to make decisions to minimize the number of children that they would have. Now, Malthus got criticized by a variety of thinkers at that time, including John Stuart Mill, who pointed out that because people are creative thinkers and can manage the land, they are capable of making food supply grow faster. And as a matter of fact, Malthus changed his mind in the second edition of his essay on population, but very, very few Malthusians, followers of his, ever noticed that. And so Malthusianism remains popular today. And whereas the population control movement, the zero population growth movement, the fear mongers about overpopulation were very, very outspoken and very prominent in the 1960s into the 1970s, as you yourself mentioned, you don't hear so much about that anymore nowadays because instead of being the forefront issue, it's become a backdrop issue. That is, for example, we are being told now that man-made climate change is the greatest threat to human survival, to human flourishing in the world today. What we're not having typically brought out very publicly is the notion that population growth is the primary driver of man-made global warming. So that's not now the main topic of conversation, but it is what lurks underneath the concerns about climate change that some people, including, for instance, President Joe Biden, have said is an existential threat to humanity, which, by the way, is utterly false. Even the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change doesn't come anywhere near saying anything like that. It only says that at the end of this century, climate change might make us about, well, 2 or 3% less well off than we otherwise would be. But it also says that we're all likely to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 to 9 times wealthier than we are now. So that doesn't sound much like an existential threat to me.
Well, even people like Elon Musk have weighed in on this issue of population, and he has recognized that the there are problems associated with underpopulation. He said, "So many people, including smart people, think that there are too many people in the world and think that the population is growing out of control." He said, "It's completely the opposite. If people don't have more children, civilization is going to crumble. Mark my words." Wow. You know, those are powerful words from a secular mind. We're not talking about the Christian worldview, but it seems that even the secular mind knows that something is out of kilter.
Yes, that is definitely the case. One of my great mentors on all of this was the late Dr. Julian Simon, who in the 1960s embraced fears of population growth and decided to write a book showing why it was so dangerous. Instead, his research convinced him of the opposite, that population growth is a good thing and that people benefit from it. He said so for a lot of reasons, both technical and fairly commonsensical. But basically, his thinking comes down to this. For every mouth born into the world, there are two hands, and even more important than that, a mind. And that mind guiding those two hands can cause that person with that one mouth to produce a whole lot more than he consumes in his lifetime. And that means that new people are benefits to each other. Now, back in the 1980s, when I wrote my book, Prospects for Growth: A Biblical View of Population, Resources, and the Future, it happened to be the case that the average American male produced about 13 times what he consumed in a lifetime, while the average American female produced about, I believe it was 7 or 8 times what she consumed in a lifetime, which, you know, might give us men reason to boast until we remember that the average American female also produces the average American male.
Right.
So, you know, we don't have too much room for boasting here. But you know, the point is really quite simple. People produce more than they consume, and that is why the long-term price trend of every resource that we extract from the earth, whether it's mineral or plant or animal, is downward. Now, price is a measure of scarcity. As scarcity rises, price rises. As scarcity falls, price falls. So those long-term downward price trends for all the things that we extract out of the earth show us that they are becoming less scarce over time, mm-hmm. not more scarce. Mm-hmm. The upward price trend of human labor, on the other hand, shows us that even while population is rising, people are becoming more scarce. Because scarcity isn't an absolute measure, it's a relative measure. And so even while population grows, people are getting more scarce because the demand for them is rising faster than the number of them mm-hmm. is rising. And yet, at the same time, because people are afraid of population growth, and for a variety of other reasons, for instance, the rising cost of raising children over time, as economies get wealthier and wealthier, people tend to choose to have fewer and fewer children. And in most of the world already now, the total fertility rate, the number of children who will be born per woman through her lifetime, has fallen below 2.1 children per woman. 2.1 is replacement level. In most of the industrialized world, we're down around 1.6, 1.7. Now, population is still growing worldwide because of what's called population momentum, because there are enough women in childbearing age still that they are bearing enough children to keep the population growing. But that will reach a peak and then turn around and begin to shrink. Various different scholars estimate anywhere from about 2050 to 2080. I happen to be on the in the group that would say more likely around 2050 to 2060. Mm-hmm. And we're likely actually to have fewer people in the world by 2100 than there are now. And that creates all kinds of problems because people are living a long time and they're not being replaced by people of working age. And that makes mm-hmm. it more and more difficult to pay their costs. When American Social Security was founded in the 1930s, when the Social Security Act first passed, there were 33 workers for every person of retirement age. Today, it's a little over 2 workers for every person of retirement mm-hmm. age. That's what makes such things very expensive. And instead of thinking that we need to reduce population to deal with that, we need to think instead, no. We need to have more children.
Dr. Beisner, I'd like to shift our focus toward the church and what mm-hmm. God has revealed to us in his word, because in the very first chapter of Genesis, he said to be fruitful and multiply. As a church historian yourself, as you look back over the centuries, what was the theological position of the church regarding children and having large families?
Through pretty much the entire history of the church, for pretty much everywhere around the world in the church's view was that children are a blessing from God and they are to be welcomed. Contraception was not welcomed. Abortion was certainly opposed in almost all instances. In fact, the Didache, one of the earliest Christian documents, the teaching of the 12 is what it's called, was probably not actually written by one of the 12 apostles, but it certainly clearly reflects their teaching. It's so early in the church. The Didache actually condemned abortion and said that anyone who would do abortions should be severely disciplined by the church, called it murder, as a matter of fact. So that was the position for pretty much all of the church through all the centuries everywhere. And there were both biblical and practical reasons for that. Biblically, as you just pointed out, Genesis 1:28 says that God, having created Adam and Eve in his own image, male and female, blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and everything that moves on the face of the earth. That's a mandate for humanity right from the start. And that mandate didn't disappear because we fell into sin. God repeats it in Genesis 9, following the great flood. We see it again in Psalm 8. And we see the same kind of thinking in Psalm 127, which tells us that children are a gift from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is his reward. Like arrows in the hand of a mighty man, so are children in the days of one's youth. Happy is the man whose quiver is full of them. Somewhere, sometime back in about the 1980s or 1990s, Jeff, I read that the average Hebrew quiver would hold about 60 arrows.
Well, that's a quiver.
I'm not sure how many women are prepared to bear that many children. Yeah, yeah. But of course, the Hebrews at that time had polygamy, which did not please the Lord. But the point is, you want lots of children, not very, very few children. That was the attitude in all of the church until the late 19th, early 20th century, when the Malthusian movement, coupled with Darwinism, that sees survival as a struggle among various races, and the racist notions of Darwinism drove the eugenics movement that we see in Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, and in Adolf Hitler of Nazism. It was only then that some Christians began to think differently on this issue. And very sadly, I think the turning point for Protestants was the Lambeth Conference of the Anglican Church, which took place, I believe it was in 1928. And there, for the first time, the Anglican Church said that artificial contraception was acceptable among its people. Within another roughly 30 years, pretty much all the Protestant churches around the world had followed suit on that. And I see that as a very sad thing, partly as a church historian who notices that historically, generation after generation, the biggest source of church growth has been not evangelism, which we certainly should do, but believing parents, having children, and raising them up in the faith and multiplying the church that way.
So what you're saying is, if just to sort of recap here, from Genesis 1:28 all the way up until the early 20th century, with very few exceptions, the consensus of the church is that that children should be welcomed and families should have lots of them.
Absolutely.
But at that point, Lambeth Conference, there was an infiltration, if you will, of evolutionary thought into the church, which has shaped where we are today. Is that right?
That is absolutely correct.
Wow. Let me give you a quote from Pope Pius XII. He ruled the Catholic Church from 1939 to 1958. Now, here's the quote. He said, "Wherever you find large families in great numbers, they point to the physical and moral health of a Christian people, a living faith in God, and a trust in his providence, the fruitful and joyful holiness of Catholic marriage." Now, I am not a Catholic. I would not agree with many of their doctrines, but it does seem that they're teaching a value of children that is not emphasized among non-Catholics. Why is that?
Well, first, let me just say that I agree totally with what Pope Pius said there, and it's a wonderful quote that, frankly, many Protestants need to listen to. Okay. And I, like you, am not a Roman Catholic. I am a totally convinced Protestant. But I think there, the Roman Catholic Church, frankly, has stayed true to biblical teaching much better than has the Protestant Church. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really actually quite shocking. Because for Protestantism, one of our great solas is sola scriptura. The scripture alone is the supreme authority in all matters of faith and practice, and for that matter, everything else that the scriptures teach about. And so we ought to be the ones who are pointing to passages like Psalm 127, like Genesis 128, like Psalm 8, and saying these passages show us very clearly that we ought to welcome children into our families. You know, Psalm 127 does not say children are a punishment from the Lord. They are a curse. It says they're a gift from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is his reward. Happy is the man whose quiver is full of them. We should see them this way. And frankly, what I see is that having plenty of children is itself an expression of faith that God has a future for this world and for my family and for the church of which I am a part. Minimizing our number of children is an expression of the opposite, of unbelief in God's blessing about these things. This is something that's being played out in real time around us, by the way. Because so many young people now, say Gen X and below, have been taught to be very fearful that human-induced climate change is an existential threat to humanity, many of them, something in the neighborhood of about 15 to 20%, are deciding, I will never want to have children because I don't want to introduce them into such a world. That is an approach that is the opposite of the approach of faith in the providence of God, the goodness of God, the power of God, to ensure that his people's obedience to his command to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth will be blessed. Mm.
Fascinating discussion, Dr. Beisner. I want to mention the book that you have written, and it's entitled Prospects for Growth, A Biblical View of Population, Resources, and the Future. There's going to be a wealth of information that will be helpful to you in having these discussions, maybe with family members or coworkers, when the subject of overpopulation or climate change comes up. You'll have some intelligent ways to respond to that and some biblical ways to do that. You can get that book at christianbook.com. Once again, the title is Prospects for Growth, A Biblical View of Population, Resources, and the Future. By the way, it's also available at Dr. Beisner's website, cornwallalliance.org. cornwallalliance.org. That website is full of more resources that can be beneficial to you as you proclaim the gospel and the Christian worldview to those around you. Dr. Beisner, great discussion today. Thank you for your time and for explaining this difficult issue for us today.
Well, Jeff, thank you very much for having me back with you, and it's been a lot of fun and mentally stimulating. I enjoy that. Thank you.
One major front in the battle for the lives of the unborn across the nation has been the sale of mifepristone, otherwise known as the abortion pill, through various retail outlets. Well, there is some good news on that front, and Parrish Alford of American Family News is here to tell us about that. Hi, Parrish.
Jeff, how are you, man?
I'm doing great. It's good to see you back in the studio, and Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year as well.
Reading your article here entitled, Major Retailers Wisely Drop Out of Dangerous Abortion Pill Business. A great, encouraging headline. Who are these companies?
Well, in this story, we're talking about Sam's and Kroger. You know, two pretty big names. They're people, retailers that people will be familiar with.
Sam's and Kroger.
Sam's Club and Kroger.
Okay. Tell us why they have decided to... You have a second thought to becoming part of this abortion pill business?
Well, I think they're beginning to see some blowback from people, from pro-life groups. I know this came after a back and forth and some email with the Washington Stand, a news outlet for the Family Research Council. And look, they were challenged on why they had mifepristone, and it was kind of odd. They were... they kind of came back with, well, we don't, but then the website was showing this. There was some confusion there. At the end of the day, both of these retailers have stopped selling it. It's a very dangerous drug.
Given the demise, Parrish, of Roe versus Wade recently, the battle has definitely shifted to the individual states, where 53%
of all abortions are now chemical. What's happening in the different states to push back against the selling of the abortion pills?
Well, I think the states have been a little behind in the pushback, you know, because we've seen so many of these ballot initiatives where pro-abortion groups have been very well funded and organized. That's been their response to the overturning of Roe versus Wade. And they've had some success. And, you know, some states have defeated the abortion amendment.
Yeah.
But that's that was kind of the front for a while. And now when we think about the drugs and the over-the-counter availability of things like this, I think it's interesting to see this lawsuit out of Texas from Ken Paxton, the attorney general there. He's filed a lawsuit in Collin County, Texas, north of Dallas, asking the court to hold accountable a New York doctor, Dr. Margaret Carpenter, for violating Texas abortion laws. You know, Texas is right now a red state and has very strict abortion laws. And it was this physician, Dr. Carpenter, who recommended, who prescribed the drugs and led to the problems with the lady there in Collin County. And this is interesting, Jeff, because New York is where Paxton filed the lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
It's where the doctor lives and practices. They have a shield law that protects their physicians. They're not a red state. They don't have the abortion laws that we see in many other states, many conservative states. They have a law that protects their physicians from lawsuits like this. So I would be surprised if this action went anywhere in the New York courts. I think this is more to get the attention of the Supreme Court and get it up there and get a ruling.
We encourage you to check with your pharmacist to see if they are offering the abortion pill and let them know that you won't be shopping with them if they do. Again, the title of the article is Major Retailers Wisely Drop Out of Dangerous Abortion Pill Business. You can follow this story and others from AFN, including daily email news summaries at afn.net. Parrish, we look forward to following this issue with you again in the future. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Well, next weekend, we'll tell you more about our special Hannah's Heart edition of the Stand magazine as we take a look at adoption. We'll hear about the Brooks family and their journey of surrender to the Lord that ended with the adoption of two precious children. If you haven't gotten your free 6-month trial subscription to the Stand magazine or have signed up for our daily email, you can do that at afa.net/thestand. Now, to share a podcast of today's program, look for us on afr.net. Thanks for listening, and join us next time on The Stand Radio.